Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Steve Beckow. I'm sure for my subscribers it's a name that is quite well known by now, and from my own experience of working with Steve, he's been one of the main sources of information from Salusar's messages. He spends an immense amount of time researching the messages for different types of information, and he's done as much as anybody, I would think, to give people information from the messages. But Steve, along with myself and 10 other people, were the speakers at the 2012 Scenario Conference at Sedona, and he, along with a number of the other speakers, have all worked together for quite a long time, particularly on Steve's side, because of their own connection with InLight Radio. Now, I particularly wanted Steve today because, in light of the significance of the 21st and the 12th, I'd certainly like to mention my own experience when Steve's back on. And I'm sure Steve would be delighted to tell us about his, and at this point in time, any other information he's got. So I view this as a really special one-off program, particularly in view of the date and our expectations of what we might have felt we should experience. So it's just a matter now of waiting for Steve to get the connection. What I want to do is to start off by talking a little bit about Steve himself and his background and his work, and then we can come on to the real stuff. Right, about 2112. Right, Steve, I'd like to talk a little bit about you and your background and what's led you to this point in time, and then we can get on and talk about 2112. But just speaking for myself, very briefly, I think my spiritual quest started some 30 to nearly 40 years ago when I suddenly decided that I wanted to know what life was about. And in one way and another, of course, it's led me to where I am today, where I wouldn't have been without a lot of fantastic help from different people who guided me, including, obviously, friends on the spiritual side. And people like Don, who's running this program, he gave me the opportunity to do this work, and I really enjoy it. So, Steve, when did your own spiritual journey start?
Well, it's probably started in 1975, Mike. And let me say hello to your listeners first. I'm happy to be on your program. When I did a three-month resident fellowship, a three-month encounter group at Cold Mountain Institute, and was introduced in one of their workshops to spiritual topics. And after that, almost immediately after that, I started to have spiritual experiences myself, spiritual experiences with a particular teacher, and I had a transformational or peak experience at Cold Mountain in an enlightenment intensive. So it kind of got kicked off with a number of, there were other spiritual experiences too at the S training that I did. So that's how it started, and I became intrigued with consciousness.
Right.
Do you want to hear more?
No, that'll be fine at that particular point. Since we are talking on 2112, let's just go back to the few years after you started, when we came to the millennium, because I think we all agree that we actually thought that ascension would take place at that time. So were you active in that particular period regarding the millennium?
Well, interesting that you should say that. I was interested in the Golden Age from another angle, because at the time I was a devotee of Sri Satya Sai Baba's, and he also promised a Golden Age, but I wasn't aware of Salusa. I wasn't aware of the sources that I'm aware of now. So you couldn't, I think I couldn't say that I was aware of what you might have been aware of at 2000.
Well, in actual fact, my messages with the Galactic Federation didn't start until into the 2000s. So I was, in a manner of speaking, in the same boat as yourself. But what maybe gave me information relative to that particular time was that I closely followed, amongst other things, Sheldon Neidel's messages. And, of course, they were very strong on the idea of ascension at that particular time. So what you're saying
is... I wasn't familiar with Sheldon.
You weren't? No.
No.
Okay.
I was not. No.
Well,
no.
Yes?
Go ahead. I actually became aware of 2012 in August of 2008 when a friend of mine that my wife introduced me to brought up the topic of 2012. And I said to myself at that time, well, what I'll do to kind of test this out is to start a website and begin to collect material on 2012. And that's when I bumped into Seleucia for the first time. And so that is called First Contact, and it's quite an extensive database on 2012, and then about 6 months later, I started a discussion group on the same subject, and then got very sick about three-quarters of a year later, September of 2009, very sick with colitis and couldn't go out of my apartment for 6 months. So I had to leave the discussion group, and I started the 2012 scenario as a blog. So I've been operating that since September of 2009. And of course, Seleucia has been a mainstay for that, for the blog, for the website, First Contact, for the blog site, the 2012 scenario has been very important to me. And of course, I have to thank you for channeling them for all these years.
Right. Well, I should think, in your own way, you've been one of the greatest supporters of Seleucia's messages, and it's been an amazing help to me in that sense, although I send them out and they're on my web page. You've sort of added another dimension by your approach to it, which is sort of to analyse the messages and pick out certain features, which I think is a wonderful job. Now, I gather after that period of time, for different reasons, you met quite a few of the people that were to play a big part in the last few years. I noticed that you've probably got no less than about, or you met in early days, about six of the people that were with us at the Sedona conference. So I suppose you all came together by what we would tend to call chance. And yet, on the other hand, we know that nothing happens by coincidence. And the whole group, including me at some stage, were obviously drawn together, I suppose, with the conference being one of the key points in our lives.
I think so. I actually met Susie Ward out of the need to have confirmation of certain events, some that happened, some that didn't happen, and not only confirmation, but also to know what the reasons for certain events or events that didn't happen were. For instance, the Haiti earthquake, the Japanese tsunami.
Yeah.
So that's how I met Susie. Susie would consult either Matthew or Hatton and let us know what they said about a missile launched in, I think, 2010 from the California coast, and nobody knew what that was. So Hatton would tell us about what that exactly was, who fired that missile. He'd tell us about the fleet that appeared over top of New York in late 2010. So that's how I met Susie. But I didn't meet Blossom actually till recently, and probably got to know her mostly because of the conference, Mike.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's amazing. But obviously, again, as I've said then, the right people come together at the right time, and I know you've had, over a few years, quite a close association with Archangel Michael, and I have to think he's probably been at the root of everything that's gone on.
Well, it was interesting, while I was still on the discussion group in 2009, a medium offered to give me a reading. At the end of it, she said, "You have an intricate connection with the one called Michael in his Sword of Truth." And I kind of, you know, I just filed that away, didn't know what it might mean. And then, of course, later when I started to do personal readings with Linda Dillon, Archangel Michael came through and began to talk about what he wanted done. The blog site, a discussion group attached to the blog site. So, and then, of course, we began to get involved in pre-Nessera funds, and so it just continued to grow from there.
Yes, indeed. I would like to make a point at this stage, which maybe not everybody is aware of, that the people at the conference, that is the speakers and the backup people, all do their work on a voluntary basis. And I say that because probably people in the normal events think that all this is done for some form of profit. And although obviously people had to pay to be at the conference, there were a lot of expenses, and that's certainly not out of order. So having made that point, one obviously likes to thank all those people for doing that work on that basis.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Michael, because we actually got a small speaker's fee, but what surprised me about that was that the speaker's fee just paid for the clothing that I bought for the conference, the meals we had en route, the expenses like taxis and what have you that we had en route. So I don't think anybody made any money from the conference, that's for sure. But, you don't charge for any of your work, I think, and I don't charge for any of my work. I would feel it inappropriate to be doing spiritual work and charging for it myself.
Yes.
But yes, you know, some people have. Sorry?
Yes, I think some people, I mean, who have maybe quite large websites and get involved in other activities, probably have expenses which they're quite entitled to try and cover. So certainly one doesn't disagree with some degree of recovery in that sense. Anyway, just move on to something that I'm only bringing up because I want to add a sort of further comment. You said one of the worst times of, or worst experiences you had was related to the Neptune expedition, the one that was received a lot of publicity, looked to be something that was definitely on and then didn't materialise at the end. Now, fine, that's history now, but what I wanted to ask you, is it actually true that you did get a message saying that because of that situation that people actually went the day before it was due to happen, but because of the circumstances, they weren't allowed to bring back a conscious memory of it. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, actually, what I heard, I didn't hear that comment, Mike. What I heard is that some people went after or at the same time. And I can think of one person in particular who was said to have gone, and yet he denied it afterwards. And we had to be quiet about that. We were told, no, he did go, but but we were asked not to name him. And, not, you know, when he actually said, for instance, that we were mistaken in saying that he went, and we had to sit there and allow that because there was real danger attached to it, Mike. That's yes. The real reason why the Neptune was canceled. Family relatives would have been in danger. And the as you well know, I mean, you know all of this, I'm sure, but the Galactics can't necessarily interfere in all situations, and there are some situations that would have involved family members that they would not have been able to intervene in, and mm-hmm. that's the real reason they canceled it. There were other reasons, too. We don't realize how our emanations can be problematic for them, and I think the number of people going at one point may have reached as high as maybe 120, maybe even higher, maybe even a couple of hundred. And yes. that would have been quite difficult for them to have tolerated. They can't really tolerate some of our vibrations very easily. It's very wearing on them, some of our third dimensional vibrations like greed or lust or anger or worry, anxiety. So when it got up to large numbers, it became a little difficult for them to consider pulling off. So that's why the Neptune was postponed. Some people have gone to the Neptune, like Linda Dillon, for instance. She goes every night.
She sleeps on
the Neptune.
Wow.
Yeah, and then comes back. So, yeah. So some people have gone.
Yes. So there's your
proof. Very much.
As I say, there's your proof then with Linda Dillon that the Neptune is an actual craft in reality.
Well, not only Linda, but, what was the fellow's name? The Inner Earth Man, Billy Woodard.
Oh, yes, yes.
He and his father visited the Neptune a number of times, yeah. And there have been others, but I'm sorry, I've forgotten all the people who I did know had either seen the Neptune or gone there. At the time of the incident, a number of people came forward, not people who were what you'd call visitors, but people who had a role with the Galactics, like Billy Woodard's father, for instance, had a role with the Galactics, so he was quite familiar with the Neptune. The Neptune, the New Jerusalem, Ashtar ship, those are the well-known ships up there.
Yes. Oh, well, that's interesting. I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't have been aware of that, and I think it's nice to know that that wasn't some sort of leg pull and that it really was something that could have taken place given the right circumstances. Now, something I read in your one of your little write-ups that intrigues me, you said that maybe about a year after you met Linda Dillon that you awoke from a dream and you had, I guess, a meeting with your twin flame. And I'm intrigued to know what actually happened, or are you prepared to tell us anything about that, or is it more personal?
Oh, no. It's it was quite funny when it happened. Well, first of all, it was a year after my friend began reading his readings with Linda. I didn't know Linda at the time. Mm-hmm. He would come and you know, read from his readings. He kept telling me to go have a reading with her, and not sure why I didn't take him up on that, but nevertheless, I didn't. Until one night, I had a dream, and the thing was that there was this person over there, this a woman over there, and I flew to her. I couldn't resist going to her just at lightning speed. And yeah. I ended up with my face against her face, like we were stuck together. And I just couldn't have it. I couldn't get enough of her, right? I didn't know who she was. And in fact, I didn't really even get a good look at her. You know, I just, there we were, like cheek to cheek is for sure how you describe it. And right. And then I woke up and I said, and of course I was just delirious, right? And yeah. I said, who is that person? And that was enough to then have me phone Linda and say, look, I've got to have a reading. I need to know who this person was.
Yes.
And, of course, in the meeting, she came, and her name is Anastara, and we chatted for the first reading. But almost immediately after that, when I had a second reading, I was told that Archangel Michael wanted to speak to me. So I take it that that's the way he set it up.
Oh, yes.
I really haven't spoken to Anastara since then. You know, no, plenty of time for that, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. I notice with yourself, as generally happens to me in most situations, that you weren't given any details of your previous lives. And I wonder sometimes why people like ourselves are almost denied that information. But my intuitive feeling is they don't want you to be distracted from the work you're supposed to do. So I think they keep it quiet. Would you agree with that?
Well, he has told me two lifetimes. I've only been here eight times, apparently.
I see. Right.
I think they may do it to, just as you said, not to have us go off on a tangent and get all egotistical. I have a friend who was, in fact, I know two people who were, what's the word I'm looking for? I know one friend who was a prophet and another friend who was a disciple of Jesus. And the one who is a disciple of Jesus does not want that communicated. You know him as well, but you probably may not know that he was a disciple. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No, I don't know someone with that background.
We should leave it because he doesn't want it known till later. He will reveal it at some point.
Yes, right.
But he's very well known. This other gentleman who was a prophet, who Archangel Michael told me was a prophet, that can be a little hard to grapple with. It can lead to being mocked. So the only thing I know about myself is that I had a lifetime when I was part of the invention of the printing press, and that I was a priest of the non-dual in Atlantis, and that I was here with St. Francis, which makes sense to me because I love feeding birds.
So do I.
And I'm very much attracted to St. Francis as well, very, very much attracted to him. But that's all I know. I'm not really interested in the was. It does make a big difference to me. I don't know if it does to yourself. We'll find out at some point.
Oh, yes, certainly will. Now, it's interesting you should mention about St. Francis, because I had my one and only reading with Linda Dillon a few weeks ago, and she also gave me a connection with St. Francis. And when I was speaking to Kathleen at the conference, she also told me that she was given St. Francis. So it's strange that there's three of us that have had this connection.
Four. My wife also had the connection. It's rather remarkable how many people that you and I know are also angels. I'm not going to kind of gossip about anything, but that's also very interesting.
Yes. Oh, well. Anyway.
It's interesting. It's not the usual lifetime.
Oh, right. Anyway, you went on then, I believe, to start one and then a second discussion group, and then various things happened, and you and I think, was it Dave Schmidt, started the Hope Chest. You got a bit interested and involved in the Tsar, which was a funny affair, really. And it's brought you more or less up to date to 2011 and your radio show and your popular part of it, which is An Hour with an Angel. So I think that almost brings us up to date, doesn't it?
No, I'd like to mention one other thing, Michael, because it's very important to my background, if I may.
Right,
and that's the vision that I have.
Yes.
Right?
Carry
the
up.
Vision that I had. By the way, am I shouting because I'm being very loud from my end because I think you may not hear me, but if I don't need to shout, maybe I will quiet down a bit.
Oh, that's
Can
fine.
Can you hear me well?
Very well, and it's not overdone. It's not sort of too harsh. No, it's fine.
Okay.
It's excellent.
So perhaps I could just mention this one other incident because it's always been very important in my life.
Right.
And that's that I was studying Enlightenment from about 1977 on and not understanding it very well, not being able to put things together. And in 1987... while I was driving my car, and I'll just give the very short form of this, I had been doing therapy with people for my PhD program, and I had found that when I listened to people for a long time, their puzzle that they faced became a picture. They would say, aha, now I see what's going on, and they would have this insight. And so I said to the universe, is it possible that life itself is a puzzle? And if so, what is the picture that life is? And all of a sudden, I found myself looking out over space. The car disappeared, and I was full of bliss. And I then saw, represented as if it were a movie, the entire life journey of an individual soul from God to God. Mm-hmm. And I knew, because bliss allows one to know, I knew who the various actors in this film that I was watching were. There was God the Father as a big golden sun that a little star came out of, and I knew the star was God the Sun, or Hindus would say Brahman and Atman. And this little golden star went over to a cloud. I knew that to be the Holy Spirit. And then it went down through spiral tubes, which I knew to be lifetimes in matter. And then its light flashed back on, and it went back in and immersed itself in the golden sun. Wow. And that was, in brief, the entire life journey of a soul. And the words that formed in my mind at the end of seeing this was, the purpose of life is enlightenment. In other words, the purpose of life for us individuals is to know our true nature. It's to know that we are God. Since everything's God, we've got to be God. And the purpose of life for God is that God should meet God in a moment of our enlightenment. So I just want to add that, if we're talking about backgrounds, that experience changed my life and set me out on a lifelong inquiry into enlightenment. So if we could just add that, then now we're up to date more or less with the present day.
Right, yes, well, that's certainly interesting. I think we've almost covered the background to Steve Beckow. Now, in light of what has happened or hasn't happened today, I'll ask you a question. Are you still planning to go to India?
Well, my contract is up, so... I don't know. Linda is going to have a webinar tomorrow, and hopefully she'll bring Archangel Michael on. We'll find out what did and what didn't happen today. I've been very blissful. I've been dissociative. I've been busy. I've been feeling as if I'd taken a drug of some sort. So I had certainly experiences today. But I don't think I could say that I'm aware of being on the fifth dimension. Not aware of it, no. So, yeah, it does, it will require some commentary from Archangel Michael to let us know the real significance of what may have happened today. How was your experience?
Well, I will tell you, but let me ask you first, did you set aside a time, and were you, in other words, trying to get an impression of what was taking place, or was this sort of more or less a normal day in other respects?
No, my wife and I set aside from 10:01 to 11:11,
right.
And it was right at the end of that period that I started to get quite blissful, quite ecstatic, quite dissociative, quite dizzy. I also remember that Archangel Michael said that this would be a switch from our heads to our hearts.
Yes.
And I also found it very difficult to make conversation. I felt that I did not want to have my mind kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to stay in the present moment. So that's what's happened for me. Also, right now, I still feel as if I'm expanding. So there definitely is something happening, and I'm not sure if today, Archangel Michael said, don't focus on a time, focus on the whole day. He says, I'm telling you, do not focus on a time, focus on a day. But for some of you, it'll be more slow because of where you are emotionally, spiritually, physically. For some of you, it will be rapid. You know, it's kind of middling for me.
Yes.
But I don't know if this is supposed to be the kickoff or whether we're supposed to have ascended today. I doubt the latter, but I presume this is the beginning of it all.
Indeed, yes. Well, I'll tell you of my own experience, but I usually wake up fairly early in the morning, and sometimes I sort of just lazily sit in bed until I feel right. I'm sort of wide awake, I'll get up. But sometimes I do fall back into sleep, but not a real sleep, just a sort of half sleep. And for the first time ever in my half sleep, as I call it, I've found myself looking at the sky, blue sky with some white cloud in it. And I saw some activity to do with UFOs. Now, in spite of my interest in it, for about the last 60-odd years, I have never, ever dreamt of anything like that. But this morning I did, and I saw a couple of lights shoot up into the sky. One of them stopped, and I could see it was a metallic device, you know, a flying craft. And there were other bits, but it was all in a sort of split second, as sometimes these glimpses are. So whether that had anything to do with what is happening today, I don't know. But I did, in fact, set myself down, laid down, made myself comfortable at about 11 o'clock, and just allowed myself to experience whatever took place. Now, I did glance at the clock after a while because I wondered how near I was getting to 11:11, and I was a couple of minutes away. So my feeling is that around 11:11, I felt what was in my mind's eye. There was like a very bright light, not a white light, a sort of almost a creamy yellowy light somehow. Can't explain it really, but there seemed to be an emphasis on this light around me. And then until I finally finished my meditation, which was about 20 minutes later, I felt very, very peaceful and calm. It was a very nice feeling, similar to what I experienced on 12:12. And, well, at the end of that time, I sort of thought, right, that's it. but I noticed for the rest of the day that I felt lightheaded. So that's really my own experience.
Well, I can tell you that right now, even at this moment, I feel myself gradually expanding. So I imagine it's going to be, Archangel Michael has talked about this actually. He said that each person will experience it slightly differently. Mm. Your experience is going to vary. For some, it will be rapid, like awakening from a long sleep. For others, it will be a slower awakening. So I would imagine that, perhaps for you, but definitely for me, it's going to be a gradual expansion and awakening.
Yes, so obviously the whole process hasn't stopped it. In fact, because of what has taken place with 1212 and today, you would imagine that it would, the whole process would speed up because we've obviously lifted into a higher frequency. But I think a lot of people might say, you know, what was all the fuss about? Because there are, as far as I know up to now, there are no outward signs of ascension. And I guess to a lot of people who expected a lot more, it possibly was a disappointment. So what would your message be to people who feel that way? I mean, how would you sort of cheer them up and give them a bit of a boost ready for the future?
Well, first of all, what we need to keep in mind is that whereas different people have said that different things will happen at different times. So, for instance, some people are saying that it's going to be a gradual ramp up. Some people are giving different dates. But no one is saying that ascension will not happen. So, and Archangel Michael has said this quite a bit. He said, you know, you guys have fastened on the date December 21st, and we're okay with that. You know, we will go along with you, and we will have things happen on that date. But it's going to happen over time. It's going to continually open up over time. So, I personally am just allowing it to happen. It's what is going on not just on Earth. It's going on all over the universe. And it's something that requires coordination. So I personally am not going to get into a state of worrying and anxiety about whether it's happening or not. If it does happen quickly, well, that's fine. If it happens in a slower manner, that's fine with me. So I don't think that anything that happens or doesn't happen right now reflects on ascension, but it may reflect on our understanding of what's going on, and it may reflect on the speed with which it's been determined. Mm. That's where I'm at with it.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, we obviously are in a higher frequency now, so how do you think the change will affect us as a civilization? Will our progress towards bringing out the truth and things like disclosure become sort of somewhat easier and be speeded up?
Well, I think so, but if I could start, perhaps not with disclosure, but more with our personal experience. If you think about it for a moment, if one really examines one's own experience, we might find that our experience for even so intimately that it's like water to the fish. Has been an experience of lack, an experience of insufficiency, an experience of hunger, an experience of thirst, always an experience of not having and then wanting. And not only wanting, but always being in the position of wanting to receive. The people in our society who've been constitutionally into giving are not that large a group, and for the most part, we're all wanting, we're all needing, and in the position of taking or receiving. The minute that bliss starts to set into our experience, we will shift from an attitude of wanting and needing and receiving to an experience of no lack and wanting to give. So I think that if you're looking for what will be the first sign that all is shifting and irretrievably becoming different from what it was, and if you want to call it entering a higher vibration, then people should look for the onset of the experience of bliss. And bliss brings all things to remembrance, just as Jesus said. When I had the vision, for instance, and was just drenched in bliss, bliss allowed me to know what was going on. I didn't need to ask it to anybody. There were no words to the vision. Nobody told me what was happening. I knew instinctively, and I knew because I was so blissful. Now, even now, at this moment, I am feeling pretty blissful compared to my ordinary experience. And because I am, I've shifted from an lack to an experience of sufficiency. And I can say to people, I think, on my own recognizance, that this will be wonderful for everybody when this shift indeed takes place. When I feel as blissful as I do at this moment, I don't care about master, quite frankly. I don't care about disclosure. I don't care what happens, because bliss is the great reward of life. Bliss is the great, not equalizer, but it's what really causes the shift that people want. And so, quite frankly, I'd suggest that rather than focusing on Nesra and disclosure, that people focus on bliss. And notice that when we focus on Nesra and disclosure, what we're really focusing on is, again, our own insufficiency, our own lack. We want Nesra because we lack money. We buys of things. But all of this is centers around and kind of revolves around our wants and needs. When we have bliss, we don't have wants and needs. So that, for me, is what's going to change life on this planet. The minute that we start experiencing levels of bliss that are significantly higher than we ordinarily do, there will be peace in the world. Nobody will want to harm their neighbor. Nobody will want to lift a weapon. Nobody will want to take something away from their neighbor. So I think, rather than Nesra and disclosure, that we should be focusing on bliss. But if you'd like to talk about Nesra, I will. I mean, that's okay.
Yes.
Well, Nesra, Archangel Michael has said that it was determined that the bringing in of Nesra before ascension of situations which were not desirable. They didn't want to crash the economy. That didn't look like a good thing to do. They didn't want to upset our, how can I say it? If everybody had Nesra today, there would be a lot of people who wouldn't go into work.
Yes.
Pardon me. Hospitals might not run. Transportation might not run, et cetera, et cetera. So I think they were wanting and had chosen to bring Nesra in after ascension. at that point, it wouldn't matter as much. Now, we may be ramping up to ascension a little more slowly than we thought. It might take a day, 2 days, 3 days, whatever. But we'll see Nesra after ascension, according to Archangel Michael, and it lasts for about 2 years, more currency. It's more a comfort to some people who like the feel of money and like the experience of having money. But gradually, we'll be able to... I've got somebody knocking at my door, Michael. Can you excuse me for a sec?
Yeah, by all means, yes.